Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, I take what you pay, but I got to put you down for a while. Well, you know I take what you pay, but I got to put you down.
Everybody, for joining me on this special episode of Queensberry Rules Radio, and please don't worry, boxing. We're not going to be quitting you, putting you down for a while, anything. I'm Patrick Connor of the Queensberry Rules, and today on the show, I'll be interviewing John DeSanto of Philly Boxing History. The reason why I chose to speak to Mr. DeSanto today is that he has a very unique and detailed perspective on the history of boxing in Philadelphia. And this weekend on NBC, Danny Garcia, a fighter born and raised in Philadelphia, will be fighting Lamont Peterson. So we'll be going through the preview of that bout, but also getting into the efforts of Mr. DeSanto to preserve Philadelphia boxing history and honor some of the men who could be considered classic Philly fighters, or at a minimum important to the city's history. So here's your chance to go grab a beer or something, as I'll be giving Mr. DeSanto a call right now.
Hello?
Hello, Mr. DeSanto?
Yes.
Hey, this is Patrick. This is Patrick. Thanks for thanks so much for stepping aboard to speak with me for a bit. I very much appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Happy to do it.
Well, I guess let's start with a mundane question just to balance things out. How's life in Philly treating you these days?
Philly's great. Philly is great. You know, weather's starting to warm up now. Not a great day today, but yeah, Philly's looking good, and you know, a lot going on over here at boxing lot. So yeah, everything's good.
Awesome. Well, I'm my uncle actually lives just outside of Philly, and much of my family is from Pennsylvania and Connecticut, so I'm not totally ignorant to those East Coast issues, even though I'm a West Coaster. But now that we've gotten the ridiculous stuff out of the way, let's get to the heart of the matter here. This Saturday, Al Haymon's Premier Boxing Champions makes its second appearance on NBC, and headlining the show, of course, is Philadelphia fighter Danny Garcia, who takes on Lamont Peterson. So, John, if I may call you that,
yes.
Is this a fight? Thank you. Is this a fight that you're looking forward to, either from a like a general boxing fan perspective, or in terms of being able to root for someone from around town?
Well, I'm definitely looking forward to the fight. I follow Danny Garcia closely. You know, he's you know, world champion from Philadelphia, and you know, super exciting fighter to watch. I like this fight because I think it's, you know, two of the top guys at 140, although they're fighting at 143. And yeah, I think it's a great fight for me because it's got Philly history impact, and I think it's a really good fight for fans in general because I do think it's a good match, an interesting match. So yeah, it's something definitely worth watching, that's for sure.
I'll definitely be tuning in. I'm not going to lie about that one, but would you say that there's much buzz around Philadelphia for Danny Garcia? And I ask that because even just a handful of years ago, I remember photos of, for example, Bernard Hopkins' parade being published in the ring, news stories, you know, going around about it. I don't really know what the parade actually entailed or how many people showed up, but it sure seemed like he was a really big deal to the city and that Philadelphia cared that one of their own was the middleweight champion of the world and becoming a star. Would you say that applies to Danny Garcia?
I do think it applies. You know, that parade for Bernard Hopkins came right after he beat Oscar De La Hoya. So, you know, we were aware of him, and he was having a terrific career, but he became a star when he fought Felix Trinidad, and then shortly after that, a year or so after that, 2 years, he beat De La Hoya and, you know, had really started to make the money and really be recognized all over. You know, for a long time, he was a pretty well-kept secret in Philadelphia. You know, we knew him he was fighting a lot, but and building a great legacy. But it wasn't until he kind of started to fight those really big names. Danny Garcia is in a similar situation. You know, he's a younger guy. He's on his way up. He certainly, I don't mean that in sort of typical boxing terms. He's a guy who's, he's pretty much entering his prime right now. He's a world champion, and he's had some really big fights against big names. And, I think he's a guy who, the city's aware of, as a boxing champion and, one of the top guys in the sport. But boxing is one of those things. Even in Philadelphia, which is a great boxing town, boxing takes a backseat to the major team sports. And, if you listen to local talk radio, sports talk radio, I wouldn't say it's a miracle if they talk about boxing, but it's a pleasant surprise when they do. It's not something that is, all over the airwaves. And I think that's the way it is throughout the country. So I think a guy like Danny Garcia is someone who, he has a following, and I think people are aware that, we have this really good young champion out there. But he's not a huge star, a standout in one of the team sports. But yeah, I think he's certainly gaining a reputation. His fight last year with Lucas Matisse was a huge win, or I guess the year before, actually. Now we're talking about in 2013.
I know it. Yeah, but creeps up on you pretty quick. I know.
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, that was a huge win, and Lucas Matisse is a big name to us boxing fans. But to the average Philadelphian,
sure.
I don't know that it meant a lot, other than the fact that he came out with the win. So it's one of those things. I think boxers, they struggle to get real, celebrity all over. And, but again, I think he's on the brink of it. If he can continue winning, he's going to end up in a huge fight with a Floyd Mayweather or a Manny Pacquiao or someone like that. And, I think that's when everyone kind of takes notice, just like with Hopkins. I mean, he couldn't question, his credentials and what he was doing. But, the average sports fan even just took notice when he became one of the biggest names. So, kind of fickle public, and, they're kind of slow to warm to our boxing stars, that's for sure.
That's for sure. I mean, I guess it doesn't necessarily have as much to do with it being a Philadelphia issue as it being more of just kind of a boxing in general issue in the last handful of years, of course. So I don't mean to suggest that Philadelphia isn't a fight town anymore, because especially compared to where I come from, San Diego, it's definitely a fight town. Do you think that perhaps Philadelphia losing a few pretty huge legends in recent years has hurt the city's interest in boxing, perhaps?
I don't think it's hurt the interest in boxing. I think, the guys, and they are absolute, Mount Rushmore type personalities who have passed away in recent years. Their careers were long over. And, one of the things that I do with my website, Philly Boxing History, is to try to keep the memory of these guys alive. The average sports fan, they of course know Joe Frazier. Everyone knows Joe Frazier will always be the heavyweight champ of Philadelphia, no question about it. His statue is going to be dedicated, put up in the fall. And, that'll sort of reignite interest in him, and I think boxing in general. But I think that it might even have an opposite effect. I think when a legend like last year Matthew Saad Muhammad died, and in recent years Benny Briscoe, George Benton, Joe Frazier have all passed away. Harold Johnson just died a couple of months ago. I think it reminds people, sometimes people forget the older guys who are no longer active. They don't all necessarily make the rounds and go to the fights and are in the public eye. A guy like Benny Briscoe, he came out to the Pennsylvania Boxing Hall of Fame when he was inducted, and that was the first time he had really been out in public in a long time, and it turned out to be the last time as well. So, you know, I think when they do pass away, I think it reminds people, you know, gives us a jolt and says, wow, you know, that's right. Harold Johnson, he was a great fighter, but he was always sort of a blue collar, quiet guy. And, you know, he was, you know, up there in age when he died, and he was not in the best health the last couple of years. So no one saw him for quite a few years. So I think when something like that happens, it's a reminder of, you know, this great boxing history that we have. I think the issues with, you know, the loss of interest in the sport, even in Philadelphia, it's a very confusing thing because, you know, everyone seems to be aware of Philly's history and how much, you know, the locals I'm talking about and, you know, take pride in it. But, you know, the big venues don't really have fights anymore. You know, Atlantic City is not so far from us. We're about an hour away from Atlantic City. So the big fights happen there. But if they were to book a big fight at the local, you know, sports arena, you know, where the Sixers and the Flyers play, they wouldn't fill it. You know, I wonder if Pacquiao and Mayweather fought there if we'd fill it. You know, I don't know. It's a strange thing. I just think that boxing has always been an up and down thing. You know, there's always hardcore fans. It's a cult. You know, people are into it, and then there's times when sure it flourishes is, yeah. And, you know, everyone is, you know, many more people are interested in it. So, you know, right now there's a very healthy local scene, a lot of good fighters, a lot of good local shows. But, you know, it's relatively speaking, you know, it's not like in the days of, you know, in the 70s when the Spectrum was a real hotbed for boxing. And it wasn't just, you know, there's all kinds of great local rivalries playing out in front of big crowds, but also other fighters. Roberto Duran came to town and defended his title there. You know, Marvin Hagler cut his teeth in Philadelphia, fighting all the great Philly middleweights and becoming, you know, he's on his way to becoming, you know, one of the all-time greatest fighters. Bobby Chacon, you know, came to Philadelphia. Thomas Hearns had his knockout streak, you know, ended in Philadelphia when he was on his way up. So, you know, there was a time when it was a really, it was much healthier in sort of interest. But, you know, the truth about boxing is it's always happening. There's always tons of good fighters, and there's always really good fights. You know, and so it's just a matter of, you know, how many people really embrace it and pay the money to go see it. You know, there's a lot of competition for, you know, people's money these days. And you know, boxing does not do a great job of marketing itself and building fan bases. You know, that's one of the things, you know, it's one of the good things about the PBC that, you know, it's coming on national television and, you know, it might, you know, launch a few new fans, you know, because people who don't want to plunk down the $50, $70, $100 to see a pay-per-view fight or don't subscribe to one of the big cable networks, you know, it's a place for them to see not only boxing, but major stars. I mean, Danny Garcia against Lamont Peterson is a terrific fight, and the undercard fight, Lee and Quillen is exciting fight. It's going to be it's an action fight. So, you know, that's the great thing about that series, and hopefully, it's the start of you know, doing something for the average fan. You know, the other sports, things like MMA. UFC, you know, I'm not one that believes that it's taken boxing's market share away, like it's boxing fans are converting to MMA. I think that, you know, in some cases, you know, there might be some people that make that move. But for the most part, what it is that's sort of a developing sport, and they do a lot for their fans. So you can see it on TV. You can go to events and, you know, not spend a fortune for it. And, you know, they're developing fans. That's something that boxing hasn't done well in the last, you know, couple of decades, I would say. You know, so, yeah, you know, I think that, you know, that's really more of the issue out there, you know, with the lack of interest in boxing. You know, it lacks that one big star, that Sugar Ray Leonard or Mike Tyson that kind of cuts through every you know, you know, appeals to everyone out there and makes people interested. And, you know, there's that. And then there's this sort of, before this new TV series, very few places you could see boxing without paying for it. So that's tough to do to you know, for a new fan to say, okay, you know, is it worth you, you know, putting down your money to see this fight? You know, how many times have you seen a fight and it doesn't live up to its expectations? So, you know, boxing fans, we kind of take it in stride, but if you're at your first fight and you just paid $100 and it was, you know, a dog of a fight, you know, you might be the last time you check it out.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't really have a reputation or anything, but I guess if I did, it would definitely be history oriented, kind of like yourself. I run that Boxing History Twitter account, and I also run the Boxing History mm-hmm. Facebook page. But in any
okay.
event,
mm-hmm.
I not too long ago was speaking on what you were talking about, kind of the pageantry a bit, and one of the specific examples that I used was that the custom of kind of parading old champions and fighters into the ring before fights was something that used to be done a lot, and you don't really see done a whole lot anymore. Maybe you might see a camera pan over to them in the audience briefly, or maybe an announcer will, you know, mention them or something like that. But it really seems like there are a lot of those types of things that appealed to fans and that were part of boxing that aren't really part of them anymore. Why do you think that is?
I think it's a great point that you make. You know, as a young fan, I'm 52, okay, years old. And so I started going to fights in the 1970s when I was a teenager. Of course, before that, I watched it on television in a great era. You know, I grew up in the 70s, basically, and it was Ali and Duran and people like that on national TV. So, you know, it was a great time. But I was always drawn in by things like that, you know. I think I kind of became a boxing fan through the history, reading about it, looking at classic photos, like the famous
Definitely.
Rocky Marciano punch, of, you know, when he won the title against Dirty Joe Walcott with that crazy, you know, that crazy photo of him hitting him. Yeah, absolutely. And like, you know, being in the library as a kid and, you know, looking through these sports encyclopedias and stuff like that, I got this pictorial history of boxing as a fairly young kid and was just drawn in by all that. And so I always feel that, like, boxing is one of the best sports. I think it is the best sport when it comes to, like, incorporating its history into the present, because you can't watch a fight without wondering how this guy would do against this great old former champion. And you know, so I think baseball does it well, too. There's something about the history of baseball that is always relevant. But boxing is number one in that category, because it's really what it's all about. You know, every fighter has a
so rich
prime.
There's so much history nobody knows.
Yeah, and it's this it's really just a sequence of events, you know. It's like, you know, it happens, you know, guys come out of the, you know, the fighters develop, and, you know, a fighter might have a particular quirk. Like Floyd Mayweather right now is undefeated. And I think a lot of the young fan base probably, you know, they nowadays when they market boxing, you know, an undefeated record is the biggest marketing tool that they have. An old timer like me, it doesn't appeal so much to me. I mean, there's something to be said for someone who's undefeated, and I think Floyd Mayweather is great, and I think he could compete in any era. There's no question about it. But, you know, I think careers get really interesting when someone suffers a defeat and you see how they come back, and you see, you know, like, undefeated can also be kind of boring, you know? And, you know, it's one of those things that, like, I think that, like, certainly with Mike Tyson, there was a time when people felt, hey, this guy may never lose. You know, he's 20, you know, barely 20 years old, and he was, you know, knocking out guys, and he looked unbeatable. But the truth is that no fighter is completely unbeatable. There have been a handful that have, you know, gotten out of it undefeated. But and Mayweather very well may never lose. But the truth is that you know, usually in boxing, it catches up with you eventually. And, you know, it's not a sin. It's just the way that it goes. And so there's this great story. There's this great, you know, through line of boxing history that, you know, repeats itself. And every fighter, you know, has a certain prime, and it's fleeting, you know, relatively speaking. It doesn't last forever. And, you know, the next wave comes on. And so, you know, it's something that is great to watch. And it's, you know, the history, it just, if you think the fights are great now, look back at the fights, you know, in the 80s, and look back at the fights in the 70s, and keep going back. And, you know, it's totally amazing, like, what went on. And in the older days, when how much, you know, these guys weren't making millions of dollars, how often they fought. Guys like Sugar Ray Robinson, like 20 times a year, you know, or, you know, it's like these guys were, it was a different game then. And it's just really interesting to see, you know, the different eras and how these guys, you know, build their careers and what they do. And, you know, again, it's always about the matchup and, you know, the accomplishments. And history is great with boxing. It's a rich history. And it's also something that when you're watching it, you know, you're watching history. It's unfolding before your eyes. And, you know, sometimes it takes some time to appreciate that, to understand it. You know, some time has to pass, but, you know, that's something that's why it's completely addictive to me. You know, boxing is like nothing else as far as, you know, being hooked on anything. It's, you know, boxing is number one for me.
Is there, to kind of incorporate the contemporary into the history discussion, is there a classic Philly matchup that comes to mind that you could compare Garcia Peterson to by chance, or maybe just a fighter Garcia reminds you of?
Well, you know, Garcia is, it's a good question. Let me think about that as far as a particular fighter. But Garcia, you know, he's got a lot of skill. He's a good boxer. As we saw when he fought Matisse, he wasn't just a big puncher. And, you know, he's got some speed and some boxing ability, but it really came out in that fight because very few people picked Garcia to beat Matisse. And it was a good fight and I think a close fight. But Garcia really showed himself in that fight and he outboxed Matisse. He outpunched him. He took Matisse's punch. He showed so much, you know, in that fight. Now, last year, he didn't have the best year. But the thing about Danny Garcia is that he is young. He's still developing. And what really sort of characterizes him and his style is that he really is a fighter. Like, he's got a fighter's mentality and a fighter's heart in him. You think about when he fought Amir Khan, you know, it started a little wobbly, you know, he was cut, he was having issues, and, you know, he kind of dug his heels in and went for the knockout and got it. You know, he does that time and again. I've seen him do it, and it's one of those things. It's something that, you know, a lot of times, you know, the classic question is, you know, Philly fighter, what makes a Philly fighter? Well, there's all kinds of fighters that have come out of Philly, and they're all our fighters. And a guy like Harold Johnson was considered, he could be kind of dull. He could punch, but he was a technician. He didn't take many chances, and he would, you know, look for the opening, and that's when he would throw a punch. And if it didn't open up, he wouldn't throw a punch, you know. So, like, he wasn't the biggest fan favorite. People loved the guy, but he wasn't the most exciting fighter. Danny Garcia fits more of the mold. He's certainly more skilled than Rocky from the movies, but the thing is that he is a guy who, if he's like this fight with Lamont Peterson, I think it's a good fight. I think it's a good match, and I think Peterson's got a kind of a style that could give him a little trouble. I think it could be I can see Peterson boxing him and, you know, posing some problems, but I really think that Garcia will step up and, you know, start to land his punches. And I also think Peterson's got a bit of a fighter in him too. He likes to fight, so it'll come down to that. But the thing about Garcia is he's a guy who, if things aren't going well for him, or if he's having trouble, you know, from a technical standpoint, he's not afraid to step in there and fight his way out of a jam, and that makes for a pretty exciting fight. And as I said, last year he fought twice. He fought Ron Salka, who was, you know, it was a non-title fight, and Salka's a good fighter, and you know, he's also from he's not from Philadelphia, but he's from Pennsylvania. He's from more of the Pittsburgh area, and he's a good fighter. But he was out of his league in that fight, weight class wise, and you know, experience wise, or you know, but it was a fight. Danny Garcia's been fighting killers for 2 years, 3 years. And he was entitled to a fight, you know, against a, you know, not an easy fight, but, you know, a fight that's not as a bit of a tune-up fight. So he took that. And then the fight before that was against Herrera, which he had a really tough night. And he, you know, most people thought that he lost that decision, but, you know, was given the decision and retained his title. But again, he hung in there. He did not step in and knock the guy out. But he, you know, he's a sort of a hard-nosed guy, Garcia, very determined. And, you know, he's fun to watch because his fights tend to all be exciting. He was cruising against Zab Judah, and then the old dog in his hometown, Brooklyn, you know, started to turn the fight, and he had some good rounds and started to give Danny trouble. And, you know, Danny had to kind of hang in there, and he had this, you know, slug with him at the end. And the beginning of the fight looked like he was going to win easy, but, you know, he's a guy who's still developing, and he's a lot of fun to watch. As far as guys that he compares to, you know, there's not another fighter that you know, comes immediately to mind, but that's something to consider for sure. But he's definitely a exciting young champ, and, you know, it's not the kind of guy that you wouldn't want to miss his fights, because, and that's one of the things I'm happy about him being on national television, broadcast television, that, you know, it can really open up, you know, if it's a good fight and if he looks good, you know, he might win a lot more fans on this night. Everybody watched the Mayweather-Canelo fight, and on that undercard is when he fought, Danny Garcia fought Matisse, so a lot of people saw that, but, you know, this would be four times that probably, you know. So, yeah, I'm hoping he has a good night, and I'm hoping it's a good fight. I hope he doesn't, even if he just, you know, I'd like to see him, you know, have to fight for it a little bit, because I think it'll be good for him in the long run as far as building a fan base. And, yeah, so I'm looking forward to it.
I agree, and I'd just like to note that if we're talking about underrated or kind of unsung fighters, I would have to say Harold Johnson definitely falls under that category. What a great fighter that just never really gets talked about, and fought some of the best light heavyweights around, you know?
A lot of the best light heavyweights and a lot of the best heavyweights, and he was not a big guy. You look at pictures of him, and the guy was a rock. I mean, he was a physical specimen. He was, you know, as muscular as can be. But the thing was is that he was not a big guy. He was a light heavyweight, and he wasn't a big light heavyweight, you know? But he fought and fought and fought as a light heavyweight, and then moved up to heavyweight, you know, to try to get it. He was chasing Rocky Marciano, you know, at the time. And, yeah, you look at Harold Johnson, he is underrated. He said, okay, look, he fought Archie Moore five times, and he only beat him once. So, you know, the casual fan says, you know, what's that? But it's Archie Moore we're talking about. You know?
He still fought Archie Moore five times.
He beat him once.
Yeah,
he beat him once, and then in their last fight, which was the only one of their fights for the title, Moore was champion, and Harold Johnson had him down. Harold Johnson had him beat, but it's Archie Moore. You know, he stormed back, and he stopped Johnson in the 14th round. You know, if he'd been able to hang in there, he would have taken the title from Moore that night. So, you know, like, and, you know, here's a guy who was ranked like a top-ranked light heavyweight, and he moves up and he beat Ezra Charles, who was a former champion, but it was shortly before Charles fought Rocky Marciano the first time and gave Marciano a really tough 15-round fight. And, you know, so, and Johnson beat him, you know, so like he was a very skilled guy and very smart technical fighter, and he could punch too, but he wasn't a puncher. And he didn't really fight for he wasn't the most exciting fighter, although he had a bunch of fights that, you know, certainly were exciting. I mean, he had I think his record was, I'm not looking at it, but I think it was 79-11 or 76-11. I mean, there's and then look at the names on his record. It's it's a who's who.
So, Jimmy Slade,
he was
Bob
definitely
Satterfield.
One of the greats.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, deep record indeed. And before we kind of turn away from the contemporary stuff, do you have a prediction for Garcia Peterson?
I'm not really a predictor, but I think Garcia will win the fight. And I have a feeling that he will stop Peterson. I know it's not like a simple math equation, but Lucas Matisse knocked out Lamont Peterson. I think Lamont made it easy for him because he came right at him. And, not the best strategy against a puncher like Matisse. But it's not as simple as saying, well, Matisse beat Lamont and Danny beat Matisse. Therefore, Danny wins. I know it doesn't work that way. But I have a strong feeling that Lamont's going to give him some trouble. And I think Danny's going to have to dig in and get him. But I think before the fight's over, I have a feeling that Danny will stop Peterson. But I see him winning either way. Peterson's I can see it going the full distance. But if I had to pick it, I'd say Garcia by technical knockout is likely in my mind.
Peterson has that Peterson has that real awkward approach that, he's that boxer puncher type, but the way that he wades in is kind of just real wily. He doesn't have a real great defense. He doesn't punch super hard. There aren't a whole lot of things that he does great, but just the way that he fights, and he fights hard and he puts it all together well. So, like you said, I think that the way that he fought against Matisse played right into his hands, and I think that perhaps he underrated him. I don't know, but I'm with you, though. I think that this is a good fight, number one, and that I'm happy that this is on NBC, and it's probably the best Premier Boxing Champions card thus far. And also, beyond that, I think that Garcia is probably going to win. I think that I'm not going to lie, like a lot of other people, I'm not the biggest Danny Garcia fan. However, calling it as I see it, he's proven himself a lot more than the people who don't like him would have wanted him to. He's a much better fighter than some people want him to be. So, I think he's a good fighter, and I think he'll probably pull this out.
I think I know what you're talking about, but like with Garcia, I never saw a fighter who came off the biggest wins. Like, he beat Matisse and beat him in grand style. Now, sometimes that annoys fans because they predict and they invest a lot in their own prediction, and everybody picked Matisse to beat him. And so, maybe they get a little annoyed that, Danny upset their prediction. So there's that. But he came, that was a high point. And he was on the short list to fight Mayweather. And flash forward 6 months, and this guy was, in the gutter as far as sort of popularity goes. And it was really interesting to see it. I think that his fight against Herrera, and I think it's very important how a fighter handles himself, after the fight. And, Danny fought hard in that fight, and it's not his fault that the judges perhaps gave it to the wrong guy. And, and Herrera went on and, the unluckiest guy in the world, in the last couple of years. But, he has a penchant for making people look bad but then not getting the decision. I think that Garcia handled it poorly. I think that was his big homecoming, his big fight in Puerto Rico. I think he had a lot of distractions. I also think that he was almost due for a misstep, because he'd been fighting high level, tough guys, all along. And, he got this guy, and I think there was more focus on going to Puerto Rico, where his family's from, and, this big idea of a homecoming. And I think he took Herrera lightly. And, frankly, I scored the fight 7-5 for Herrera. And after the fight, I think, Danny, not directly after the fight, but in the weeks after the fight on social media, Danny sort of defended himself and said, "Oh, I finally watched the fight and I won I think I won it 8-4. I mean, like, he had a knack for saying the wrong thing. And I think part of that is a young fighter kind of coming up and figuring out how to do it. I also think his father, Angel Garcia, Angel Garcia is a super nice guy. I love the guy. You know, I see them at their gym all the time, and you know, they're friendly, nice people. But you know, Angel's got a big mouth on him, and you know, he's first one to tell you that. And he some of the stuff he says, you know, I think, you know, can be tough one for Danny's image. But I think it's time. I think Danny's trying to do it now. It's time for Danny to speak for himself and to figure out the best way to, you know, present himself, because he's a really nice guy, and he's a good family. He's a good kid. You know, I can say that because I'm twice his age. But the thing is he's a really nice kid. And but it's a I think it's a, you know, everybody's watching, and media's been tough with the fans, and media have been tough on him. And I think it's rubbed him the wrong way, and he hasn't handled it the best. Same thing with the Salka fight. You know, if it hadn't been first announced as a title fight, you know, he's a junior welterweight, and he's fighting a lightweight for the world title, an unranked, you know, lightweight, someone unranked in the junior welterweight. But that got fans off to such a, you know, start. And again, the fact that he's coming off the Herrera fight, a lot of people wanted to see him fight him again. But again, it's how he handled it. I don't envy being that. I envy his position in some ways, but like having to say the right thing. You know, he hasn't learned the best way to do that, and I think he's hurt himself, hurt his image. Because as I said, he was on a high with the Matisse fight, and you know, would be, you know, I'm so surprised at where he is now, because people talk about him, and they do, you know, they're not crazy about him these days, and he's going to have to fight his way back in and start, you know, handling himself, and just be more careful about what he says. Cause he really did say, you know, I think he said that he had a few missteps when it came to like, expressing himself. And it's, you know, fans know what they like, and they're not going to put up with that, because most people feel that he lost. If he came off and said, "Woo, what a tough night I had, and you know, I'm lucky to come away with my title," that goes a lot further than you know, swearing that you won. But when's the last time you saw a fighter, you know, not believe he won a fight? You know, it's a rare occasion that a fighter can be humble and sit there and say, yeah, you know, that was a tough night. But yeah, so I think he'll get there. I hope that he, you know, continues to win and has a nice long prime, because there could be some really big fights for him. And I think he's a good guy, and he comes from a good family, and you know, they're good people, and so I'd like to see him kind of resurrect this part of his career. In the ring, he's not having too many problems, but yeah, outside, you know, I think it has been tough this last year, especially.
You pretty much, I think, nailed it. I don't know why. Perhaps it's, you know, some people just get mouthy. I guess I can kind of count myself among those people, but you stick a microphone in their face, and for whatever reason, the Garcias don't seem to say very the things that people take well, I would have to say. I put it lightly, I guess. But yeah, I think that there's something there. I don't think that he's a totally unlikable guy. Now, I won't start talking about the fashion sense or anything, but in any event, I think he could be easier to root for, and I think that you really, you nailed that. There are a couple things they could be doing PR-wise to help that out.
Yeah, I think he started really well. And then, you know, has sort of lost the way a bit. And again, I don't know what it takes to get in the ring. You know, it's easy for me. I sit outside and I watch it, and I'm an observer 100%. You know, I could never have imagined myself being a fighter, being in there. You know, I just it's one of the things I admire about these guys, you know, their ability to get in there and do what they do. But, you know, there's a lot of pride. There's a lot of ego involved in being a fighter. And imagine what it must take to be a fighter on that level. It's so personal. And, you know, the truth is that, you know, he wants to be popular. He wants people to like him. He wants to be a star. And, you know, he opens his mouth. He says something the wrong way. And you know, now there's no escaping it. You know, you make post one little video on Instagram or Facebook or Twitter, and, you know, they're going to let you know exactly how they feel. And sometimes that's hard to navigate. I kind of root for him. To be honest, I do something in Philadelphia called the Briscoe Awards, named after Benny Briscoe, we mentioned him earlier, and present the fighter of the Philly fighter of the year, the Philly fighter of the year.
Right?
He won 3 years in a row, and the first year that he won, he was there, his family was there, they had a good time, The next year, he didn't come. And it's not a requirement to come and pick up your award. And he's a young guy on top of the world, and I root for him, and I support him. And so I get it. If you know, I do this free event for fans, and, you know, it's small time when, you know, in the scheme of things. But I like it when fighters look at that and say, hey, that's something I can't miss, because it's really important to my fan base. There's not a stronger fan base for him than in Philadelphia. You take a guy like Steve Cunningham, who, you know, this last year, you know, he wasn't even up for an award. I do the awards in October. He fought the night before, and, you know, when I saw him after the fight, he said, you know, I'm going to be there tomorrow. Steve Cunningham, he's flown back from Europe after, you know, his cruiserweight champ, and said, oh, I'm fighting on Saturday, but I'll be there. You know, like, don't worry, I'll be there. And he's there. You know, Danny Garcia didn't make it the last two times that he won the Fighter of the Year. And last year's award, I'm always like 6 or 8 months behind. It's like for the prior year. He also got Performance of the Year for his win against Matisse. So me personally, yeah, I'm disappointed if he doesn't come, because I want him to come, and not him. I want fighters to come and enjoy it and appreciate it and show the fans that, you know. And that's another thing. Like, you know, so it's not just on the global scene, even locally, you know. I think it personally, you know, hey, it's up to him, and I support him either way. And the award is based on merit, and he deserved those awards. Some people say, oh, don't give it to him, he's not going to come. That's not what it's about. You know, it's up to him to come and participate in that. And so personally, am I disappointed that he didn't come? Sure, because, you know, I'm throwing a big party, spending a lot of money, and, you know, I want him to be there to kind of feel it, you know, like. But again, he's got his whole, he's in a different category right now, and he's putting it together and figuring out, you know, which way to go. So, you know, that's, I think it's one of the things that might not be known, you know, on the national level, but, you know, some of the things he said and some of the things that have kind of gotten him in trouble with the fans in general, you know, he's done that locally too. But he's a good guy, and he's a hell of a fighter, and, you know, he's, I think, 26 years old, so there's a lot more fights and a lot more Briscoe Awards maybe in the future for him. So hopefully we'll see him next time. But yeah, for sure.
Well, not showing up certainly doesn't make him a bad person by any means. So
not at all.
Hopefully nobody gets that impression. But it's like you said, it's kind of easy to understand how that could be the case and whatnot. And I mean, actually, I wanted to ask you also what the Briscoe Awards were kind of about and why you named them that.
Okay. When I started my website, PhillyBoxingHistory.com, about 10 years ago, almost immediately one of the things I wanted to do was to create this award. I'm very focused in the past and, you know, the past fighters, but, you know, I go to all the fights, all the local fights for sure, and I go to a lot of fights in general, always have. One thing that, you know, when we go out to a little fight in South Philly, you know, a little club show or whatever, we go to a Blue Horizon fight, you know, back when the Blue Horizon was, you know, still in full swing. What we're seeing is history in the making. And as someone who goes back and tries to write about the history and create this story of Philly's history, if you go to my website and see, you know, like, for instance, I might be sitting down working on the Blue Horizon's history and say, okay, let me get every main event. Let me list every main event that happened there, and let me find a photograph of every fight. Well, it didn't take long for me to realize photographs of every fight don't exist. So, you know, I make sure that I'm there. You know, you got to do it while it's happening. I mean, they may exist, but they're kind of lost at this point. So I'm there every fight, and I'm making sure that we're capturing the history. History is really important, and I think what's unfolding before us is 20 years from now, 30 years from now, we're going to be talking about guys like Danny Garcia, and not just him, guys like Gabriel Rosado, who's had a great career. You know, he's been hard-pressed for a win, you know, in the last couple of years, but he's fighting, you know, the top guys, and he's had a great career. People like that. So what I wanted to do was find a way, you know, I was doing a lot with the past fighters, find a way to incorporate what's going on now into my overall effort of preserving boxing history, you know, Philadelphia boxing history. And so it made total sense to create awards for the current fight scene, Philly Fighter of the Year. Philly Fighter of the Year is where it started. And in years since, this will be the eighth year I'm giving them away, we've added categories as Rookie of the Year now, Amateur of the Year, Prospect, et cetera, Knockout of the Year, things like that. So that was made perfect sense. But then I named them after Benny Briscoe because Benny Briscoe is a great example of the classic Philly fighter. He's not alone. There's a big list that, you know, sort of fit that sure. Description. But I think Benny is really one of the best examples of it. He was a real blue-collar guy. He worked his whole career, you know, while he was fighting and going to Argentina to fight Carlos Monzon. You know, he had a regular job. You know, the guy was
very blue-collar. And he sure gave him hell in that fight as well.
Absolutely. I mean, he was a great fighter. And one of the reasons that I felt really strongly about naming the award for him was, and it's not just naming the award for him, the award looks like him. I hired an artist to do a statue of Benny Briscoe. That is reproduced every year as like the trophy. And then a couple years in, I had a different artist create a second Briscoe award. It's a medal. Looks like a big coin. So Benny Briscoe's profile's on the front, and you flip it over, and the Liberty Bell's on there, and, you know, it's engraved with the winner's names on it. And I have an artist working on another award that'll come out in a couple of years. And then we'll have a certain award for Fighter of the Year, one for Fight of the Year, and then these other categories will have this other award. So they're in his likeness, and they're named after him because I feel Benny Briscoe's a guy who's career was an amazing career. He was one of the, truly one of the best fighters to come out of Philadelphia. He had the misfortune, in a sense, of coming up at a time when there was only one champion
great
out there,
era.
Two at the most, and it was Carlos Monzon. You know, forget it. And he had a great, he got two great fights with Monzon. He had a draw and
sure,
he had
yep.
a 15-round loss. But you know, he's the kind of guy that probably will never get into the International Boxing Hall of Fame. And there's a whole long line of people that can explain to you why that is, that as good as he was, maybe he wasn't that cream of the crop, you know, that deserves to be in there. I would argue it the other way and say, you know, there's more than just having won a world title that should get you in there. And so whatever, to make sure that to help to keep his legacy remembered and alive, created this award, named it after him, maybe awards in his likeness. And the idea is, if it goes on, it's been going 8 years, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, after I'm gone, you know, if it's still, you know, being given out, the thing is that people will say, oh, the Briscoe Award, who's this Benny Briscoe? You know, because of those of us who saw him fight, we'll be gone. But, you know, and he's not going to be a household name, that's for sure. But for people who saw him, he was not only a good fighter, he
memorable.
Was so popular because he was memorable and popular and fun to watch. People loved him. He also, as one of the early adopters of the shaved head, was one of the baddest looking guys in his day. And he lent his look lent himself very well to being immortalized in a trophy because, you know, he's got a cool name, Benny Briscoe, and he's got a cool look. And now the awards look like him and, you know, you can't miss him, you know, if you see a picture of him. There's no way. He had this big, you know, strong head, and he was a bit of a bulldog, and he was, you know, so he deserves to be remembered. I do a lot of things to kind of remember these past great fighters. He gets special attention on this one because I really do think he's a great example of a Philly fighter, and I think his legacy deserves to be, you know, celebrated and remembered, and there's other ways to do it for these other fighters, but he got the call as far as this, and, you know, he's passed away now, but when I created the award, the first step was to go see him, get his approval, make sure he was okay with the idea, and I went to see him on a Saturday and at his house, and the local promoter, J. Russell Peltz, who's a International Hall of Famer, he was one of Benny's old promoters. He helped to set me up with that because Benny's a guy who was always very, very elusive. You know, he didn't go to the fights after he retired. He wasn't out there, like, you know, making a name for himself. He's a shy, kind of down to earth guy. He was a neighborhood guy. You know, he hung out with his friends, and he wasn't. So we went to see him, sat down with him, explained it to him. He liked the idea. He loved it. And family was big on it, and everyone was in agreement that we should do this. And so, you know, it goes on, and now he's gone, which is sad, but it's also makes me feel like, hey, this award's that much more important as far as, you know, keeping that legacy alive. I talked to his wife a couple weeks ago. You know, we talk to each other all the time. She's a big supporter of this and loves that, you know, it's going on and the people remember him, Benny. And so it's a good thing, and it's something that is important to me. Like, I think this history is great, and these guys are my heroes. And so I find ways to, keep them alive, you know, and that's, I think that's important. I've done some other things, like some of the other side projects with the website. You know, Joe Frazier is going to have a statue in the fall, and I'm not involved with that, although, I'm a very interested observer, but, Joe Frazier is not the first real fighter to have a statue in Philadelphia. I'm not talking about the famous Rocky statue.
Yeah.
Joey Giardello, the great middleweight champ, who was born in Brooklyn but came to Philadelphia and fought his whole career out of Philadelphia, trained out of South Philly. We did a statue. It was my website, and two other groups got together and raised the money, hired the artist. They created the statue, and it's been up in South Philly, just a block or so away from the famous Passyunk Gym, which is now long gone, but it's where Joey Giardello trained. So there's a bronze statue of Giardello, and the whole statue, the base and everything, it's a snapshot of South Philly boxing history. Other fighters are named on it, long gone gyms and arenas that once were, you know, the hotbed of South Philly boxing are named on there. They're all gone. You know, most of them are gone. You know, they're not around. So there's things like that to kind of like keep the memories alive of these people. And, you know, one of the, I don't know if you want to talk about this now, but one of the other projects I do is this gravestone program.
Yeah, please do.
You know, a lot of fighters fight their whole careers, and, you know, in the end, they don't have a lot when it's all over, especially these guys who came, you know, long before. And I sort of accidentally discovered that a lot of these fighters who have passed away are in unmarked graves. The first one that I discovered that with is a guy, Tyrone Everett, who was a great young fighter of the 1970s. Some say he lost the biggest robbery in boxing history. He fought at the Philadelphia Spectrum for the world title against Alfredo Escalera. And a lot of people, you know, scored the fight 13 rounds to 2 for Everett. But he ended up losing the decision somehow. You know, some notorious, it's a very notorious decision, yeah. And so he was a great young fighter. That was his first loss. But 6 months later, he died. He was shot and killed and, you know, cut down, 24 years old in his prime. And, you know, flash forward 20 years or so or more, and I was doing some research in the library, and I was reading about Tyrone Everett, and I started to read about his funeral and his death and everything, and this big outpouring of emotion at his viewing, how the line wrapped around the block, and everyone loved this guy, like he was very popular. And so, you know, I just decided that, you know, let me go out and pay my respects. You know, I found out where he was buried and went to see, you know, it's the Catholic in me. I went to, you know, to pay my respects, and, you know, one of these guys I always admired, and couldn't find his grave, and found out, oh, there's no stone. It was just a patch of grass, and he had been dead for, you know, a very long time. So right then I thought, oh, you know what, this is something I could do. I could maybe get him a gravestone, you know, remember him, you know. It's not often that you can do something positive for like a hero of yours. You know, they're long gone. You know, I never met him. So it just seemed like the thing to do. So started the process. You have to get approval from the family. So I found his mom and his brothers. And, you know, it was an amazing experience because his mother was thrilled that someone cared after all these years, let alone remembered, you know. And, you know, they were in favor of it. So went forward, put it down, you know, put the stone down. His mother wanted his picture on it. You know, she was Tyrone was his mom's, you know, pride and joy. You know, she had five sons. Three of them were boxers. Two of them, Tyrone and his brother Mike, were very, very good fighters. Fought for the world title, both of them. And but yeah, she wanted his picture on there, so we did that. It was a great experience. The family, like I've become, they're like extended family now with me. It was a really good thing. And so I said, hey, you know what? Maybe I could turn this into a program and do it more than once, do it every year, something like that. So I moved on. So I've done five. I'm in the process of my fifth one. The first one was Tyrone Everett. The second one was Gypsy Joe Harris, a great enigma of the 1960s, great welterweight who lost his boxing license when they found out he was blind. He had been fighting blind in one eye. And at 22 years old, he lost his license, could never fight again. He was a natural. He was a great fighter. People who saw him said, nobody like him. You know, there's not a lot of film of him. You know, I've mostly read about him. But again, found the family and put a gravestone on there. Families, I'm really close with them. Actually, this weekend, there's a stage play, a one-night-only stage play of the story of Gypsy Joe Harris. Like, his brother wrote a book about him. The family's producing this, you know, this performance. It should be really interesting. But again, I'm quite close with the family now. Yeah, me too. Yes, so again, he was, you know, if you talk to people who know Philly boxing history, Gypsy Joe was one of the favorite guys. You know, he was a really unusual guy. Went on from there. I did another guy, Garnett Sugar Hart, who fought in the 1950s, a top welterweight contender, number one contender. And then the fourth one I did was a guy named Eddie Cool, who fought in the 1930s. He was a great natural fighter, was kind of a partier, a big drinker, didn't train a lot, but he could, you know, it's almost like they show you in movies. Like, you know, they'd find him kind of like, you know, like out of it, and they'd dust him off and they'd put him in the ring, and he was a brilliant fighter. Had a great career.
And he died young.
Died
too,
quite
I believe,
young.
Right?
Died
yeah,
at 35 years old. Yeah. So, yeah. So, died young. Been dead a long time. He died in 1947. And he was tricky to find the family. But again, put the stone down, remembered him. So, it's sort of this little club. And the fifth one is going to be Matthew Saad Muhammad, who died last year. It's the only one of these fighters that I ever knew or really saw. Like Tyrone Everett was in my time, but I never saw him fight live. I was just a little too young. I started going to the fights just after he died. But Matthew Saad Muhammad is one of my favorite fighters of all time, maybe number one. That's very hard to pick this one, but he was an amazing fighter and a great guy. And
well,
he died last
one.
Year at 59. Yeah, I mean, and I grew up going to the Spectrum and seeing him fight these unbelievable wars. I mean, even before he won the world title, he had written the boxing history book right there, and then he went on to beat Marvin Johnson for the title in a rematch, and it was a great fight. And he had one great television war after another. I mean, I think he's the most exciting fighter who ever lived, but, you know, I'm biased, but he was a great fighter. And so he was buried last year, but there was didn't have a headstone. So, you know, I'm working with his daughter, and we're raising the money now, doing quite well. And, we'll probably put that headstone down by the end of the summer, something like that. So it's something that I do. The goal was to do it every year, but it's not always the money to do that. So I'll do five in the last 8 years. So it's more or less every other year I'll do it. And, I got a long list of people who, you know, need a headstone. So I continue to raise money. People can go to the website and see read about the gravestone program and, you know, maybe send in a donation, $10, $20. That's how we're getting this Matthew Saad Muhammad stone done. There's not any one big giant donation. It's fans. You know, he had millions of fans, and, you know, we had to raise a considerable amount of money, but fans are coming through, and, you know, some people are donating $500, which is great, but a lot of people are donating $10, $20, and that's really cool because that's what's making it happen. And so in the end, you know, we'll have the money and we'll put this stone down, and it's, you know, going to have his picture on it. You know, it's one of these ones with a, you know, image, a laser cut image into the stone of him. It's beautiful. It'll be beautiful.
Well,
and, you know.
You posted a picture, I believe, of it. Sorry to interrupt you, but you posted a picture, and it looks great. So, or at least a picture, a preview of what it would look like.
Yeah, it's like the people who make the gravestone, they create this like digital mock-up, you know, using the photo that the family wanted, and it looks really good, and it'll be beautiful. And he's right where he's buried. He's buried in a section of Philly called Mount Airy, and it's Ivy Hill Cemetery, and he's right down the lane. Joe Frazier is buried very close to him. So, I actually, when I was out at the cemetery, I saw Joe Frazier's grave for the first time just, you know, a few weeks ago. And he's got a big, beautiful, you know, presentation there. So Si Muhammad will be right down the way, and they're, you know, two of Philly's all-time greats, no question about it. But it's something, again, everything I do with the website and everything is, it's about celebrating, remembering this great history, and really kind of, it's a tool for me to learn about it too. I mean, I'm a boxing history geek, but you know, there's so many stories and so many details to kind of, you know, pick up. And so, doing all this stuff, it fuels my interest, and it's a way to, you know, a real positive way to, you know, to put my interest, you know, in perspective. And I just learn about these guys, and you know, every, you know, tomorrow someone will email me and say, hey, my grandfather was a fighter, and I've never heard of him, and I'll start looking him up and say, whoa, look at this record, he fought in the 1910s, and you know, like, oh my god, look at this. And it's very rewarding. It's really a lot of fun to do it because I just have a real love for it. And
It's very, apart from it being a personal interest, and you know, I'm obviously younger, but I can very much relate in that regard. And maybe about a year ago, I was contacted by the family of John Busso, and they mm-hmm. said that they had no articles, they had no anything of, you know, mm-hmm. about him as a fighter. And so I, you know, collected a whole bunch of things and sent it to him. And it's not about, it's not about being, paid for doing any of this. It's just that we feel it's important. The remembering and preserving the history of this is important. And, you know, the project to help fallen fighters get gravestones is one that's perhaps more attention grabbing in that way and kind of sad. And exactly a year ago was when we lost Mr. Saad Muhammad. So I really appreciate the outstanding effort on GoFundMe that's raised money to, I mean, and you've said this, you already said this, that you've done it. This is the fifth time, so it's not like this is an isolated thing, and it's really great to see people showing their appreciation in that regard. And I'm happy that we also got that into the conversation before we headed on out of here.
Yeah, good. Yeah, thank you very much. It's, you know, it is, it, you know, the truth is, you know, I do a lot of different things. Like, I'm very involved with the Pennsylvania Boxing Hall of Fame. I'm the chairman of the Pennsylvania Boxing Hall of Fame. I do all this stuff that I'm interested in boxing, but, you know, the Gravestone Program is the one that hits home. People hear that and they have a reaction to it. They either say, this is, well, everyone thinks it's a good thing, generally speaking. You know, it's good to remember these guys and do things for them. But, you know, another common reaction is where people say, oh my God, how could he not have a headstone? And all these people that made money off this guy, they don't step up and do it. You know, I can't speak to any of that. You know, boxing is a tough, cold sport. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, do make money off these fighters, but we can't sit there and wait for the deep pockets to step up and say, oh, okay, yeah, I made millions off this guy, so I'm going to buy this stone. It doesn't happen that way. The way it happens is somebody watched him knock out Yaki Lopez on TV back in 1980 and said, I never saw a fight that great in my life. I'm going to send $20 in. And that's really all it takes. You know, if he had millions of fans, we needed 5,000. The stone cost $5,000. There's some more expenses on top of that. But of the millions of fans, if 100 people stepped up and gave $50, the money is there. If 200 people gave $25, the money is there. It's simple math, and it's a lot of money, and it's something that, you know, I appreciate every dollar that comes in. But we don't have to sit there and wait for, you know, the powers to be to come and, you know, say, oh, I'm going to do this thing, because this isn't about PR and say, no, aren't, you know, isn't this organization or isn't this, you know, famous, you know, promoter or manager, aren't they great? Look what they did. Now the fans are doing this. I support, I welcome any kind of support from the the powers that be for any of these projects. But the truth is that it's the fans. We're all fans. And, you know, we step up and, you know, give a little bit and get together. We can make a lot of things, you know, happen. And this is something, it's a small thing, but it's, you know, it means a lot to the families.
Exactly.
And it does. Yeah. And it's like, he's a great guy who, you know, now his final resting place will be marked with a beautiful stone, and it'll be, you know, appropriate for someone, such a great fighter and someone who is so important to guys like me that saw him. And, you know, I'm still shaking my head from some of these fights I went to in the 70s. I cannot believe how exciting this guy was and how many holes he dug himself out of, as far as, like, you know, being on the brink of losing fights, cut, knocked down, beaten up. But this guy, there was a period of time when you could not beat him. He just had too much drive and too much heart. And
you had to be willing to die.
You know.
You had to be willing to die to beat Muhammad.
Definitely. He's a special guy. You know, there's, you know, he has his own characteristics, but all these fighters that have come before, we talked a lot about Danny Garcia and Bernard Hopkins, who are making great purses now. They're making a lot of money. Saad Muhammad made good money in his day. You know, he was on TV. But most boxers don't make very much money. And they all have stories that should be remembered. And that's kind of what I've dedicated myself to do. You know, I used to be a corporate guy, but, you know, I was happy with my paycheck, and I was happy with, you know, traveling and doing all kinds of things that you like, perks with, you know, working hard in a job. But, you know, there was a lot going on that I couldn't do it on nights and weekends, you know? So I took a major hit, and I said, you know what? I got to put this energy into where I want to put it. And there were great old fighters who were passing away. When we talked about at the beginning of this conversation, one after another, so I'm sitting at my desk, you know, working 12-hour days. I'm saying, I got to spend more time with these old guys, because that's what this is all about. It's all these guys that came before. So, you know, I made a major overhaul in my life, and I did, you know, I always was involved with this kind of thing, but, you know, I started to do it more or less full time. And, you know, I hope that now maybe I could find some living, I can make a living doing it. Well, I'm here to report, you cannot make a living doing it, but it's still worth it, you know. So I find other ways to make a living, and I put as much time as I can into this. And it's quite a bit of time, you know, because I make it my number one work type priority. So, yeah. So
it's appreciated.
I'm happy of it. I'm proud of the site. I'm proud of the site. You know, it's a time when I was looking on. If you Googled Benny Briscoe 10 years ago, you wouldn't find very much. But now, you know, there's a lot of places, especially my site, where you'll get, you know, a lot of information about him and all these other guys. So, you know, started off with maybe 15 fighters listed on the site. Now there's over 600, and, you know, photos, memorabilia, stories, you know. So that's the thing, trying to keep these guys' memories alive, and they deserve it.
And, you know, I remarked the other day when I had found out about the Matthew Saad Muhammad GoFundMe page that not everyone knows this about Matthew Saad Muhammad, but he was born and essentially abandoned by his aunt when he was very young, and he didn't know his own name, or he wasn't able to vocalize it properly, I suppose, so he was in a way nameless, and then in death also nameless, because he didn't have a gravestone. And so it was, for me personally, it's kind of poetic but appreciated as well that was prevented by you and a whole number of people who donated, so that's appreciated. That's
definitely cool. Yeah, well, I appreciate you saying that. Definitely when we started this project, you know, the family had already picked out a stone. It was fairly pricey, but, you know, it was one of those things where it's like, well, that's appropriate for this guy. And so now it's just a fundraising effort. So, you know, that's the thing. It's like people really have responded to, in general, they like the idea of the gravestone program, but with Matthew Saad Muhammad, people have stepped up, and a lot of people have donated. We're still raising money, because, like I said, there's, you know, there's a cost of the stone, and there's other things. And there's some good prizes out there. If people, you know, donate to a certain level, they'll get, you know, kind of gifts, you know, thank you gifts. So if anyone does want to, you know, participate in this, they can still do it. Go to GoFundMe.com and just search for Saad Muhammad. You know, you'll find it. There's if you search that way, and you'll see that, you know, we've met our goal, and that's the goal that I put up there, was for the cost of the stone. But, yeah, I'm going to keep it open for a little bit, because there's other other expenses attached to it. And so it's, but it's looking good. Fans really stepped up, and it's going to happen. And it's going to happen, you know, a little later this year, probably, you know, 3, 4, 5 months from now. We'll put it down, and we'll have a little celebration about it and remember him properly. So.
Well, I don't have a world of influence on social media, I would say, but I would have to say that I guess I have enough that anything that you're doing in this regard, I'll be more than happy to try to get the word out for you.
Great, great. That's great. I appreciate that.
Well, John, I appreciate you coming on and talking to me. Great conversation. Learned a lot, and I hope that it really resonated not only with Philadelphians, but hopefully with boxing fans in general. I hope that it spoke to people.
Well, thank you very much for having me on. I really appreciate the opportunity. Always a good, you know, chance to talk about boxing. You know, boxing fans, you know, unless we go, like, to a boxing event, like the International Hall of Fame or something like that, usually it's like I'm the only guy at a cocktail party that's interested in boxing. So, you know, it's always good. It's always good to have a chance to talk about it. And I know there's a lot of us out there who, you know, whether you're a Philly boxing fan or boxing fan in general, you know, we're all kind of in the same boat. We love this thing. And yeah, so it's great to talk about it and connect with people out there. And yeah, I look forward to that. You know, if anyone wants to talk about Philadelphia boxing, they can come to the site, email me, and you know, I have an ongoing conversation, not only on social media, but just at the site. You know, it's a hub for people who are interested in these fighters, and it's been great because, you know, I've learned a lot, and I've come in contact with people, you know, like me. Sometimes you have these interests and you think, oh, you're the only one that has them, but, you know, there are a lot of us out there. So yeah, it's good. It's good to talk about it.
Yeah, and, you know, you didn't actually mention the website itself, so I'll go ahead and piggyback off that, but it's phillyboxinghistory.com for anybody who didn't catch it or couldn't put it together, I guess. But, please visit.
Thank you very much. And if you didn't write it down, then just, you know, Google one of your favorite Philly fighters, and you'll find it, or put in Philly Boxing, and you'll find it. And, yeah, check it out. There's you know, a lot going on, and, you know, the Hall of Fame's coming up in May, and the Pennsylvania Hall of Fame. So there's always stuff going on, and the Briscoe Awards will be in October. So there's always interesting things going on. And, I welcome anyone to, come to the site and check it out. And if they have any questions, you know, please reach out.
And regular updates on the site, too. I should mention it's not just some static, you know, thing that's just there.
Every day.
It's updated regularly. So in any event.
Every day there's new content. Yep. So yeah, thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks again, and we'll stay in contact.
Thank you. Take care.
All right, that was John DeSanto of Philly Boxing History. I'm sure if you listen to that, you know that. Regardless, it bears repeating, and I hope that people really do visit phillyboxinghistory.com. And look forward to Danny Garcia versus Lamont Peterson on NBC this weekend on Saturday. I know it was a bit of a mix-up this week with the show, and so this is, in a way, the replacement, but a very good replacement, in my opinion. And I again, have to kind of give a shout-out to Mr. DeSanto there for joining me and speaking with me for a while, because that was really great. So next week, I'm about 98% certain we'll be returning to our normal time, normal day, to talk about this Danny Garcia versus Lamont Peterson business, but also move forward with the boxing that we're going to be experiencing in the next few months, which is considerable. And also, needless to say, James Foley of Bad Left Hook, my homeboy, he's going to be back with me next week. So thank you, everybody, who tuned in today, I guess I can't say that since I'm not doing it live, but thank you to everybody who tuned in and listened later on. And we'll see you next week. Take it easy.